Before we dive into today's incredible episode, I wanted to remind you of some exciting things I have coming up. I am leading a retreat this August 24th through 28th through the Madeline Island School of the Arts in Wisconsin. This one is called Craft Your Best Draft, a revision retreat where we spend the entire week transforming your draft into a polished, publication-ready piece, and I teach my proven three-step method of revising that has helped thousands of writers transform their drafts. If online opportunities are more your jam, I've got some things for you there too. I teach a weekly writer workout for women writers where I give a craft talk and we have in-class writing time, and then I also lead multi-week workshops, and I do one-on-one coaching and manuscript consultations. You can find out all the information at NadineKennyJohnstone.com. This is Heart of the Story, and I'm Nadine Kenny Johnstone. I'm an author and a holistic writing coach who talks with today's top women writers about how to navigate life when things don't go according to plan. These impactful conversations and personal reflections invite you to be seen, feel supported, and ultimately fall back in love with yourself. So let's go together to that honest, powerful place, the heart of the story. Hi, friends. I'm really, really excited to bring today's essay to you because it is so meaningful to me on many levels. This essay describes a time 13 years ago when I was a new mom and I was so in over my head and deeply needed rest and help. And my friend Cheryl, who at the time had a teenage daughter, Emma, swooped in without me even needing to ask in order to give me a weekend away to refill my well. Now, all these years later, my son is about to become a teenager. He turns 13 at the end of this month. And Cheryl's daughter, Emma, is a full-grown woman who is getting married. And I have the great honor of officiating her wedding this summer. So when I think about this essay, I think about one mama helping out another mama during a time when I needed it desperately. And I was thinking about it for today, in particular Mother's Day, because this day is really layered for me. I remember the many years of infertility that we went through when I really hated Mother's Day. Mother's Day was just salt in the wound of everything that I wanted and was so out of reach. And I know for many friends who have lost their mothers or have a complicated relationship with their mothers that Mother's Day is really difficult too. So however you may be feeling on this day, I think the main theme I wanted to concentrate on was just one woman helping another woman. And I think we can all pinpoint moments from our lives when another woman has stepped in to help us and it has meant the world to us. And then in return, we've helped them or we've paid it forward in some way. And so this essay is called Pay It Forward. Gio was about 10 months old when we put our Massachusetts house on the market to move to Chicago. Every other day, in addition to raising Gio and teaching and creating online curriculum, I would have to ready our house for a showing. This wasn't so easy to do when our entire first level was a baby gymnasium. We had a pack and play with a changing table permanently fixed in our living room because it was a pain in the butt and unsafe to climb 17 steps every time I had to change Gio's diaper. There were all sorts of machines, a swing, a walker, a bouncy seat. There were board books and rattles and stuffed animals, building blocks and toy cars and boppies and teething rings. Our cute little house no longer looked so cute. It looked like a baby had vomited everywhere. Because, well, it had. Like many old New England homes which shelter critters during the winter, ours had become home to a certain rodent who would traipse around the inside of our walls at night. I couldn't even think about the germs that the mouse was spreading around the same furniture that Geo touched and chewed on every single day. And prospective buyers might not be too keen on rodents either. One night, Jamie was watching TV in the recliner when he saw the mouse bravely scurry across our living room floor right in front of him and head for the kitchen. Jamie looked everywhere but couldn't find it. On a Friday night after our house had been on the market for months, we decided to treat ourselves to a family dinner out, which was a rarity with a newborn baby. We had a showing the next day that we were very hopeful about, and we had spent the better part of our evening tidying up the house before we went out to eat. When we came home, though, and entered our kitchen, we heard a strange noise. As I set Geo's car seat carrier on the floor and took off my coat, animal squeaks emanated from our stove. I realized that the mouse had found its way inside the back of our stove and couldn't find its way out. It was trapped somewhere within the deeper inner workings of the oven. I couldn't even deal. It was all just too much. We had raised a newborn baby all on our own. We had readied our house and put it on the market. We had job hunted. We had planned a cross-country move. We had done seemingly insurmountable things. But I could not, for the life of me, even contemplate how to find this poor mouse and free it from the stove before prospective buyers came over the next day for a showing. Surely, they would walk in with their realtor only to hear mouse squeaks coming from our oven and they'd turn right back around. We would never sell our house. We'd never move to Chicago. We would never have help raising Geo. We would never have a date night or an uninterrupted night of sleep. And I would never look young and rested ever again in my entire life. Ever. Like most people's catastrophizing, mine always ended in never or ever. Maybe the universe had a way of communicating that I was in over my head and deeply needed some R&R. But the next day, my friend Cheryl said she was taking me for a rejuvenating overnight at a resort spa concert venue that I had never been to before. This was not my normal life. I had never, up until that point, been to a spa. I had only ever gotten my nails done 3 times in my life: junior prom, senior prom, and my wedding. Cheryl and her husband were originally Jamie's friends, but since my pregnancy, Cheryl and I had become closer. She was always so big-hearted, offering to take pregnancy portraits of me in a long, flowy sundress at a nearby park when I was close to my due date. And after Geo was born, coming over to rock him so I could actually shower and eat. Cheryl and Billy had some perks at the resort, and for whatever generous reason, Cheryl chose to use them on me. While Jamie was disconnecting the gas line and pulling our stove away from the wall, then dismantling the back of it until he found the mouse, I was packing a bag with clothes and makeup that I had not worn since before my pregnancy. I was going to wear a dress, gasp, and have an alcoholic drink, double gasp, and sleep all night with no midnight feedings, unimaginable. The second I got into Cheryl's car, I felt free from all anxiety. I strapped myself in, not having to worry about a car seat and a diaper bag. Cheryl and I talked and laughed the whole drive. When we arrived, we went up to our nice hotel room and unpacked our bags. Then it was time for the spa. We changed into our swimsuits and fluffy robes and entered the lounge with its relaxing music and cucumber water. We talked to the other female spa goers, and I thought I would faint from happiness. I got a pedicure, then we got dressed up, and the icing on the cake. Cheryl curled my hair, and we got into an elevator to go watch Lady A perform in the arena. As we sang along with the concert crowd, my heart felt so full, and I realized the true gift that Cheryl had given to me. In each situation, there was nothing in it for her. There was no ulterior motive. She saw a woman who needed help, and she gave it. Flash forward almost 4 years later, November in Illinois, and I experienced a similar form of generosity, but this time from a woman I had never even met. My memoir was due to come out in 6 months, and my publishing house was hosting a retreat in Arizona. It sounded amazing. All the women writers would get to meet each other and swap notes. There would be a professional photographer there to take our author headshots, a video crew to record our book trailers, and a host of great speakers to walk us through promoting our books. It would be beyond beneficial. The problem was, it sold out in a second. I desperately wanted to go, but there were no tickets available. And then a woman, a total stranger who'd bought a ticket, could no longer make it. And she gave the ticket to me. She was giving it as a gift, and all she asked was that I pay it forward to another woman when I could. She wasn't doing this for recognition. She asked to remain anonymous if I shared with others that I'd been gifted the retreat ticket. To say I was shocked is an understatement. I did not know this woman, but I knew women like her. She reminded me of Cheryl, who had swept in at the most needed times and offered support and generosity. As a woman used to self-sufficiency, I almost didn't know how to accept the offering, but I felt so incredibly fortunate. The retreat weekend was beyond my expectations. I left cold, gloomy Illinois behind and headed to sunny Sedona. My days consisted of jogs among the boulders and talks with talented women. Afterwards, I sent my gifter a thank you note and a journal, but she was happiest to learn that I was planning to pay it forward by giving a scholarship to a student in a retreat that I was leading that winter, and another spot in an online class I was teaching. I emailed two women writer friends who most needed generosity in that moment, offering them the retreat and class opportunities. Their reactions were the best gifts. They were as grateful and shocked as I was when I'd received such generosity. But it was even more fulfilling being on the giving end. And when they asked me how they could repay me, I simply said, pay it forward. I think the real beauty of this piece is also that even when we aren't expecting it, little gifts and big gifts can just be dropped into our arms. When this stranger allowed for me to go to the writing retreat in her place, it was so unexpected and so generous. And as I said in the essay, it impacted me in a way that it inspired me to help other women out as well. And I've seen such beauty happen for retreats that I've led, where a friend will gift another friend a gift card so that they can apply it towards a retreat or a workshop. I witnessed a writer in my community, her son actually gifted her a retreat for a big birthday that she was having. And I've seen so many people look at a friend or a loved one and go, I think they are really in need right now and I'm going to help them out. And then I've seen people take it upon themselves to go, okay, you know what? This is something that I need right now and I'm going to gift it to myself. We count as the people who are worthy of receiving help. We can help ourselves, especially as I've been thinking about the retreats that I'm about to lead this summer and fall. I'm just so, so excited that writers are gifting themselves and each other the time to prioritize their creativity. When I was thinking about how I approached the writing of this piece, a few different moments came to mind. I was teaching full time and parenting a toddler in the season when I got that unexpected gift of going on retreat. And in that moment, I was really thinking about how lucky I was that this stranger had stepped up to help me. And then I just instinctively, by association, started thinking about the other times that women had helped me. And that weekend with Cheryl came to mind immediately. And when I thought about how to go about writing it, it was so funny because what popped up the most was the mouse situation. Like the mouse was like the straw that broke the camel's back, right? Like the mouse during that time of trying to prep and show and sell a house while raising a newborn and trying to find jobs and housing across the country. It was just too much. I wonder why. And I was like, I've got to start with the mouse, because the mouse really was like, I just can't. Like, I'm done. It's like, okay, I had worked so hard to plan this cross-country move and to put our house up for sale while working and while raising a baby. And like the mouse, I just couldn't do it. And Cheryl just kind of knew at that time that, okay, she has reached her breaking point. So when I went to the writing, I knew that I wanted to focus on that evening of coming home to mayhem. So when you are doing your writing, it's really helpful to think about a visual representation of a moment that showcases the internal turmoil. I wanted something external and visible that would showcase all that was going on internally. And that's why I started with the mouse. And so I wonder, the next time you're going to write, rather than saying, I felt, can you avoid the I felt? And instead, show it through scene, show it through objects and smells and sounds and gesture, show it through something that we'd be able to visibly see if this scene were a movie. I hope you enjoyed listening to this and reliving it with me. I want to not only thank you, dear listener, but also my dear producer, Michelle Rado, who has her own podcast called Daring to Tell, where she talks with writers who read their own true stories of personal daring. And she's also an audiobook producer. She works with writers to self-narrate their memoir. You can find out all the info about her on her website, michellerado.com. And remember, friends, every heart has a story, and every story has a heart. See you next time.